Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Hello and welcome to the film show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and digital. I'm Martin and I'm on my own. Hello and welcome to the film show. As I say, I'm on my own this week. Unfortunately, Denise has been taken ill with a bit of food poisoning. So I hope she's listening. And if you are, I hope you're going to get well soon. And that's going to lead to today's show being a little pared down and a little padded out. The plans and the content for the show are sort of almost being moved around and changed as I speak. So I apologise if today's show has, let's say, a slightly more chaotic feel to it than what it normally does. But if you're a regular listener, you're sort of used to that. So I'm going to kick off with a couple of bits of gossip. Al Pacino, what do you got? Has been in the news a bit this week. Two reasons. He has an autobiography out called Sunny Boy, Which apparently was the name that his much-loved mother used to refer to him as. And it looks a very interesting book, his view of his career. There's been lots of extracts published in some newspapers with him talking about his experience of working on the first Godfather film, where, of course, at the time he was quite an untried, untested actor and was quite often working on a bit of a knife-edged as to whether or not Coppola was going to sack him from the film due to him not quite being what they wanted for the character of Michael. So that's probably going to be a good read. Also, he's been speaking about his relationship with his 16-month-old son, Roman. Al is 84 now. And, yeah, 84. And it would seem as though his relationship is generally carried out mostly on such things as Teams. And so he's got a bit of an online relationship with his son, which might be no bad thing. It's probably not for him, but it leaves his all the actual work to his ex-partner. So yes, Al seems to have sort of taken a bit of an easy way out of there. What else have we got? Oh, hang on. It's farewell to one of the, probably one of the last remaining stars of the golden age of Hollywood musicals, Mitzi Gaynor. And Gaynor was a frequent star of big MGM musicals in the 1950s, most famously South Pacific, where she played one of the leading roles in that. And is probably most famous for washing that man right out of her hair. She tailed off making films during the 1960s, but had a hugely successful career playing residencies in Las Vegas, and was still working quite late into her career, but unfortunately passed away this week at the ripe old age of 93. And something which is going to feed into something we'll talk about after our first piece of music. The production company Working Title has announced that they're planning to fund the production of more films in this country, but they are looking very much at low-budget movies. And by low-budget movies, we're talking about stuff that's going to cost up to about $15 million, so $15 million and below, which, you know, still sounds a fair bit of money. But as we'll be having a think about in a short while, when you're spending $200 million on Joker Folie à Deux, one has to start thinking, where does all that money go? So they are looking to expand their actual production schedule, which is good news. And also there's been talk in the week of actual studio production facilities being expanded. There's now a growing amount of film work taking place in such cities as Liverpool, where much of the last Batman was shot on location. Hull has been the location for Steve McQueen's Blitz film, where London's Docklands were created in the whole Dockland area. And there's also big studio facilities in both Manchester and in Leeds now. And there's been a number of productions that have been under before the cameras in Sheffield. But there's a big push for some big investment in the London area, as you always would expect. A big expansion of a studio facilities down in Buckinghamshire, in the area around Marlow, which, as you might expect, as one as it's the most expensive places to live in this country, has brought out the NIMBYs in force. But on the eastern side of London, there is soon to be a huge studio facility that's about to open in Dagenham, quite near where the Ford factory used to be, and also at Waltham Cross in East London. So there's a huge amount of actual facilities being made, and due to tax breaks and exchange rates, there's a number of big Hollywood movies which have been shot in this country. Christopher Nolan shot a number of the Dark Knight films for locations here in and around London. And of course, Tom Cruise, he just can't stay away from here, and filming in Derbyshire, some of the big train stunts that were in the last Mission Impossible film. So it seems as though film production is quite healthy, although there have been, obviously, in recent years, the COVID and the American writers' strike. So, it's good news. One can only hope some of the films that are made are going to be a bit better than some we've suffered through this year. So I'm going to go right into trailer trash now. I've got two for you. One of them is a new film starring Danny Dyer, who seems to be everywhere again at the moment. He's in this new TV series of Jilly Cooper's Rivals. Well, it pays the rent, doesn't it? And here's a new feature film he's in called Marching Powder, which is said to be a rom-com, but probably not the rom-com you'd expect. It looks like Danny is a ne'er-do-well who is trying to change his life so that he can restore his relationship with his beloved. It looks like it might be all right. I'll give it the benefit of the doubt for now. But I saw it when I went to see Joker, Folie à Deux, the other week, and the trailer itself was designed only to be shown with Joker, as it referred to the Joker film that you were about to sit and watch. Maybe a lot of people who were sitting in the auditorium at the time enjoyed this trailer more than I ended up enjoying the feature. But hey, who knows? And the other film that the trailer has finally hit, and we've mentioned this a few times this year, and this is the third Jude Law film that we've had released this year. And this is The Order. And this is another different sort of film to what the other ones have been that Law is. It looks a very, very hard-hitting police thriller. And it's set in the 1980s, I believe. And it's about infiltrating neo-Nazi groups by the FBI, with Jude Law being the FBI agent who's leading a group trying to infiltrate this very active group of so the trailer is just out, and it looks pretty hard-hitting stuff. Alongside Jude Law, there is also another British actor, Nicholas Holt, who looks almost completely unrecognisable as the leader of this neo-Nazi group, which is carrying out bank robberies, bombings and murders across the United States. The film is directed by the Australian Justin Kurzel. And Kurzel is, let's say, the master of the hard-hitting movie. If any of you ever saw his first film, Snowtown, you know just how intimidating and challenging his films can be. And his last film, Nitram, was, I think, one of the best films of, I think it was 2022, I caught that. And that was an absolutely marvellous film. So I'm hoping a lot from The Order, and I'm sure we'll be seeing lots of it on our cinema screens when the coming features bit turns up. Right then. Music. Now, I'd put together a collection of musical numbers from 70s cop movies here. I try to stay away from blaxploitation films, but we will be having some of that later on, as you can imagine. So I've got four tracks here from four cop movies from the 1970s, and you can argue with me whether or not they're cop movies. I think they are. And I'm going to kick off with the theme music from the second Dirty Harry film, Magnum Force, which was composed by Lalo Schifrin. And I think is one of the best pieces of theme music ever. I can remember the first time I saw Magnum Force. Film came on and the credit sequence is just the 44 Magnum as the credits come up and this particular number blaring out at you. Lucky. You're listening to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital. So the story of the week, or what has been gaining lots of headlines in newspapers and journals, is the ongoing tragedy of Joker Folie à Deux, which is looking to be facing as some writers have described it, a catastrophic loss in revenues. The film, in its opening week, earned only $65 million at the American box office, which was very, very small compared to what most opening weekends are for big movies like this, and then drops off a cliff the following week to only $8 million. The film has had terrible, terrible reviews. On Rotten Tomatoes, at the moment, it's bumping along with a rating of 32%. Now, personally, I don't take that sort of thing into account, but there are millions out there that do. And the word of mouth on the film is toxic. So the film seems to be in a loop now where you can't see how it's going to get out of this. Something isn't going to happen all of a sudden and people say, no, we really must go and see it. So on the release of the film, it's been completely surrounded by controversies about how much it cost. The actual production of the film was over $200 million. And again, you get to the point, what is all that money spent on? And if you think about the film itself, most of it takes place either inside a prison or in a courtroom. There aren't that many big scenes for a nearly two and a half hour film. And probably its most controversial aspect is, apart from all the dialogue, interspersed between all that are these musical numbers, which can range from just Joaquin Phoenix or Lady Gaga singing in an empty room to sort of a bit more show busy, but still, $200 million? It does seem to be an awful amount of money. There's talk that the film's theatrical run is going to be severely curtailed, and plans are already being made to get the film on for streaming purposes much earlier than was initially anticipated. Now, the original Joker cost $60 million to produce and ended up making, knocking on for $1 billion, and was, I think, is at the moment the most successful, financially successful R-rated movie, and also won 2 Academy Awards, thus gaining both critical and financial success. And with a film like this, it's not just the production cost that has to be taken into account. It's the marketing and the advertising, which often ranks up to be twice as much as what the production costs are. And you can take as a good rule of thumb is the higher the production costs, the higher the advertising costs are going to be. And all of that money, of course, for the advertising is just money that's being poured down the drain at the moment, as just people are not going to see it. It should also be said that one of the things that's bumped it up from the $60 million budget from Joker to $200 million to Folie à Deux is that Joaquin Phoenix and Todd Phillips, the director, received $20 million each as their fee, and Lady Gaga got $12 million. Well, there's $50 million out the window straight away. There's also a sort of... There has been a tailing off of the popularity of superhero movies. However much Folie à Deux might not be your normal common or garden superhero movies. But Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom didn't do as well with $430 million take as was expected. And the Marvels, $200 million, which was well below expectations. It's only really been Deadpool and Wolverine, which has hit with the public, which so far making $1.4 billion at the box office. Were we expecting a third Joker film? It's highly unlikely, unless it's going to be a cinema verite, black and white handheld camera version. But the whole thing now has put the jeopardy of some of these big budget movies. It won't stop because, you know, the way cinema works now, it needs these big tentpole films to be released at certain points during the year because that's where they make their money. They lose money on most of every other film, but one of the cash cows, not bringing home the bacon, mixed metaphors there, I know, is sending something of a chill throughout the entire Hollywood industry. These films were seen as being surefire successes. And however much, I think as I said when I gave my review, I said, yeah, it may be in 10 years' time, it'll be looked back as on as one of the most audacious, daring pieces of cinema that Hollywood, or mainstream Hollywood, produced during this decade. I still think it had a lot of faults, but it was interesting. But a film having to make $400 million before it brings a profit, it's got to be more than interesting for the millions of regular cinema goers out there. So that's a bit truncated to how we were going to do this. I think Denise and I would have discussed it a little more broadly. But be sure to hear more about the ongoing after effects of the financial disaster that will be Joker Folie à Deux. And I still think Lady Gaga was marvellous in it. So, another piece of music from the 1970s. And I'm going to go next with theme music from The French Connection, William Friedkin's Oscar-winning cop thriller. The music was composed and performed by jazz musician Don Ellis. It's a strange sort of score. It's quite downbeat, although this is a sort of like jazzed up version of it all. And if you can remember when The French Connection came out, you'd never really seen a feature film like this. It looked at times to be more like a documentary, especially on its location footage of New York, which looked cold, dirty, miserable, with very little colour to it. It was almost like a black and white movie with the scenes out on the streets of New York. But this sort of conglomeration of different bits of music from the film that Ellis put together for this particular track gives you a sort of feeling for just how grim the film was. So sit back and enjoy Don Ellis and a theme from The French Connection. Thank you. There is the theme from The French Connection by Don Ellis, and you're listening to The Film Show on channel Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital. And if you want, you can go back and catch up with the show via the Sheffield Live website. Well, I'm looking at what we were going to do here now with the reviews we were going to do, and most of it we're not. But I am able, you lucky people, to give you the rundown of one movie that I went to see yesterday, The Apprentice, Ali Abbasi's film about Donald Trump. Donald Trump in the 1970s. Where he sort of started to become the Donald Trump that we all know these days. I won't say know and love, but just know. Abbas is a very interesting director, actually. He's there's a couple of films he's made which have been very, very fascinating. He made a film called... hang on a sec. Ah, that's it. Holy Spider, which bizarrely was like a serial killer movie, but set in Iran, and it followed an Iranian female journalist trying to find out if there was a link between the number of young women who were disappearing from the city, and obviously was finding difficulty in doing her investigations and trying to find out what exactly was going on. It was a really fascinating film. For one thing, he was sitting there thinking, well, how on earth did he ever get to make this? Because it was shot in Iran, and it was co-funded by some Scandinavian production companies, so they got round some of it like that. But it's a really fascinating film about a side of Iran that you sort of think wouldn't exist, but is in so many ways just like things in the West, in the way that crimes are committed, investigated, and quite often never resolved. And the other film that he was that he raised a lot of interest in was his film Borders, which was a very bizarre film about a customs officer who was able to smell people coming through customs as to whether or not they were carrying illegal contraband. And this customs officer was very, very peculiar looking, sort of half animal almost and half human. And her grotesque looks were sort of made her something of an outcast amongst her colleagues. But as the film goes on, you find out more about it, and it's like a mystery. And as she meets another character who comes into it, all of this stuff unfolds. And it's a fascinating little film, and one that I would heartily recommend you to try and catch. It's... apparently you can get it on Prime Video. So Borders is for you to try and catch up on. But now to our latest film, The Apprentice. As I say, this is about Donald Trump in the 70s and the 80s, and specifically about his relationship with the lawyer Roy Cohn. Trump is played by Sebastian Stan, and Roy Cohn by Jeremy Strong from Succession. Now, if you don't know anything about Roy Cohn, Cohn was Senator Joseph McCarthy's right-hand man during the 1950s, who was instrumental in the House Un-American Activity Committee purges of different parts of the American institutions. He was a conniving, lying, nasty, vindictive man who ruined hundreds and hundreds of people's lives by carrying out campaigns against them to have them thrown out of their jobs, in some cases drove them to suicide, and all in all is someone you wouldn't want very much to do with. And Trump falls into his orbit when he is in the early 70s, when he's still working for his father, Fred Trump, as a slum landlord in the States, in New York, should I say, specifically. And somehow he links up with Cohn, and Cohn start giving him advice on how to behave, how to run his business. Never apologise, never deny anything. Attack, 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 which, as you can see, is pretty much the way that Trump runs his businesses these days. So it's a strange film, I found. I was expecting it to sort of dig in a little deeper. And in the first hour, it does, I think. And that in the first hour is when Jeremy Strong and Roy, and his portrayal of Roy Cohn is much more to the fore. In the second hour, it goes into Trump in the 80s, his marriage to Ivana, and Roy Cohn's presence just slips away in the final hour. There is a particularly nasty, and I felt quite gratuitous, rape sequence where Trump rapes his wife Ivana. And the film says this is based on true events, but certain parts have been fictionalized. Now, Ivana did accuse Trump of raping her, but later withdrew that accusation when they were having their divorce settlement. But this scene sort of comes out of nowhere, and for me, sort of like threw me out of the film. It was quite graphic and quite upsetting, and it took me a while to sort of get over it. And I don't think it worked for whatever reason. You think a scene like that should work, because the film itself then went back to, from my point of view, giving Trump a bit of an easy time. And there was a couple of other bits in it which seemed to be quite true. There was one good bit early on in the film where Trump turns up to one of Cohn's parties, and Andy Warhol is there. And Trump has no idea who Warhol is. But Warhol tells him this thing, you know, everything's about money. Art is about money. And there are certain things there that you can see are being seeded into Trump's mind. But at the end of the day, the film didn't have the punch for me that I thought it was going to have. And is that because, I don't know, are we so used to just seeing Trump? And the Trump that we see now is this, you know, he's like a cartoon figure. Looking at this depiction of his early days, it seems almost as though, really, here we've seen that. It all seems a bit almost restrained in a way in how Trump runs his businesses and acts in the company of other people. So, yeah, I was disappointed. I wanted it to be tougher, harder, nastier. And apparently Trump has finally entered Trump's radar, and he's sent off a tirade against the film and its makers earlier this week, I think, on his Truth Social network, where I think he's, threatening to throw the film's stars and producers into prison as soon as he becomes president again. Just like he's pretty much threatening everyone else whoever he is not liked. So that in itself, you know, almost overshadows the way Trump is depicted in the film. So I'm going to give it a sort of a qualified rate. It just needed a bit more. And sitting here thinking, I'm thinking, well, what I should have done today was, I should have done what Trump did this week. You know, I'm not going to do this radio show. I'm not going to present this radio show. I'm just going to stand here and dance for an hour. Because believe me, radio is the best medium for me to dance in. Right then, on to our next track, which is from a film called Electroglide in Blue, which is about highway patrol cops out in the West, which was written, produced and directed by James William Guercio, who this is the only film he ever made. His real stock in trade was a record producer, a very successful record producer, produced bands such as Chicago. And he wrote, produced and directed this movie. It's about a highway patrolman who wants to become a detective, gets involved in a murder case. And it's one of those early 70s films where young man starts off with lots of hope, but he's ground down by the corruption and the venality of those around him. And it's also got an absolutely fantastic score, which was composed by Guercio. And this track is called Prelude.
Thank you.
There you go, Prelude from Electroglide in Blue. You're listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, and on digital. A quick look, and it'll be a very quick look, at what is being released next week. There's a number of... release I'm really looking forward to. If you want any more superhero stuff, there's Venom... The Last Dance starting next week, which I'm told is going to be the final Venom movie. I haven't seen any of the others, so I won't be losing sleep over that. There's the new Almodovar film, which won the prize at Venice, The Room Next Door, with Julianne Moore, Tilda Swinton and John Turturro. And there's the absolutely bonkers Emilia Perez starting next week. Jacques Audiard's musical, yes, another musical, about, it looks like drug gang cartels. It looks sensational. That's three of the films that are going to be starting next week. So we're starting to get a lot of quite big films coming out and some more interesting films as well. So, I am now going to play the last of my cop movie themes, and I'm going to end with a piece of John Carpenter music, Assault on Precinct 13, which I remember going to see this about 78, 79, and I was absolutely blown away by this movie, and I've loved Carpenter's work ever since. And in the same way as Gercio wrote, produced, directed Electroglide in Blue and also composed the music, Carpenter also wrote, direct and composed this piece of music, which some of you might know. I will be back after this, as I've still got 10 minutes to fill. Assault on Precinct 13 by John Carpenter there. A film, if you've never seen it, will teach you the lesson of never take your ice cream back. So, my God, I can't believe I've been talking for so long. I'm going to run out this week's show then with a Blaxploitation track. I was putting together a playlist for a few weeks' time, so I've gone through that and picked one, a nice long track, so I only have to play one track. And this is The Pimpmobile from Truck Turner, a great little Blaxploitation movie, of the score composed by Isaac Hayes. And not only that, stars Isaac Hayes as the eponymous hero of the film. So here we go, Isaac Hayes and The Pimpmobile. Oh, by the way, bye-bye for now, and enjoy your films next week. And there I went and played the wrong track. There you go. Hang on a sec. Hang on. Back in business.
Oh,